Thank you, Vishu Sarab. I apologize. I can't talk too loudly, so I hope it will be. I hope it will be audible. The Rambam in Hilchos Tshuva, when he discusses the yisod of Bechira Chavshis, and he writes how all of Torah, all of Tanakh, is nonsensical without recognizing that HaKadosh Baruch Hu endowed us with the Bechir HaChavshis. So in that context, the Rambam writes as follows. Ilu hayo hakel, Perikei Halacha Dalet. Ilu hayo hakel gozer al ha'odam liyas tzadik ha'rasha. Right, a contrapositive. If HaKadosh Baruch Hu would decree that whether a person should be righteous or evil, O ilu hoya sham dava sham moshech es ha'odem bi'ika toldasa, or if there was something genetically predetermined that irresistibly and irrevocably drew a person l'derech min hadrochim, O lemada min hamadaos, O ledeo min hadeos, O lemasem min hamasem. So then he goes on to say, Hechayim matzavolano ayidei anevim, and what room is there for all of Torah, and how could there be sacha v'onesh? So the Rambam talks about bechira in four areas, right? He's in negating this belief in predetermination. He says it can't be that there's something which causes a person, again, involuntarily, l'derech min hadrachim, l'mada min hamada'os, l'deya min hadeos, or l'masa min hamasin. So three of the four are not so surprising to us. Derech min hadrachim, meaning there's a derech tova in life, there's a derech ra'a in life. Rambam is saying we're not involuntarily drawn to either, it's our bechira. Deya in the Rambam, in this context, means character traits. We may have certain predispositions, but there's no predetermination. And what character traits a person develops and cultivates. Thank you. What character traits a person develops or cultivates? Again, there is no determination. It's a person's bechira. Masim and a masim. What a person does, what a person doesn't do. But what's that fourth phrase? Lamada min hamadaos. Right, Mada means knowledge in the Rambam. Sefer HaMada. This is the first of the 14 Svarim of the Yad HaChazaka. The Rambam is talking about how there's Bechira Chavshis when it comes to knowledge. We don't usually think of Bechira Chavshis in terms of knowledge. No, we usually think of Bechira Chavshis more in terms of freedom of action. And a person's character, deum and adeus, is sort of the cumulative effect of his actions, or it's the driving engine of his actions, which derech he goes on. But this is interesting, huh? The Rambam says there's bechira for mada min hamadaos, what a person knows, what a person accepts as truth. So let's maybe try to understand how Bechira expresses itself, how Bechira is manifest in the area of not just action, but in the area of knowledge. Okay, on the most basic level, a person has Bechira, whether or not he seeks knowledge. A person can remain ignorant with wrong assumptions and wrong axioms just because he made the choice not to seek knowledge, not to seek truth, not to learn Torah, not to seek out Amita Shel Torah. And then clearly what the person knows or doesn't know, what he'll believe or not believe, will be a reflection and a function of his bechir. One person chooses to apply himself to learn, to find out, to discover Amita Shel Torah, and the other person doesn't. The other person doesn't learn, doesn't seek knowledge, doesn't seek Amita Shel Torah. So then, by Mada Men HaMados, will be affected by one's Bechira. There's another way in which Bechira is relevant. There is an apparent Shnei Ksuvim HaMakrishim Zezah. On the one hand, we believe, we know that there's absolute truth in the world. There are some things that are absolutely true. There are some things in which there are differing legitimate opinions and there's legitimate disagreement. And some things are absolutely true and other things are absolutely false. But there's a Ribono Shel Olam is absolutely true. The Ribono Shel Olam gave us the Torah is absolutely true. That Klal Yisrael is his Am HaNivchar is absolutely true. We believe it's absolute truth. And what's more, we believe that the absolute truth can be presented and understood in a very, very compelling way. That's a Kosev Echad. A Kosev HaSheni is that a person has Bechira to believe in the Ribono Shel Olam or Rachmanu Litzlan, not to. How does a person have Bechira when it comes to, if it's absolute and absolute in its compellingness, so how does a person have Bechira? How does that work? How does that work? So the cause of us, you hear the question is, we think of absolute truth as something as, so how can a person not acknowledge? How can a person not concede? How can a person not recognize? And yet, a person can not acknowledge, a person can not recognize. So the Kosev HaShlishi is that because HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to have Bechira in everything, HaKadosh Baruch Hu made it that a person has to be receptive to truth. A person has to be open to truth. A person can be presented with the most compelling argument, the most compelling demonstration, but whether or not that registers, whether or not he accepts it, is ultimately going to be a function of whether or not he's receptive to truth. I think that they say from himself, Salamter, I say according to the view in the Medrash that both Rashi and Ramban quote, that Paro had Bechira through the first five Makos. How is it that he doesn't recognize that what he's doing is self-destructive and suicidal? How is it that he doesn't recognize that clearly, Moshe Rabbeinu is representing a God who's for real, that he's representing the Ribono Shel Olam? Yeah, again, not out of tzidkus. The question isn't why didn't Paro become a big tzaddik? Just out of self-preservation, just out of self-interest. So they say from Yisrael Salanta that a person only knows what he's willing to know, and a person, no matter how overwhelming and compelling the demonstration and the proof and the evidence are. Well, nice. The way the Ribono Shel Olam created the world is a person only comes to know that which he's receptive to knowing, that which he's open to knowing. That's another crucial way in which Bechira plays this determining role when it comes to madam and amadalas. A person has to be receptive to truth. Another application of Bechira in the realm of knowledge either actively or maybe too often passively, we make a choice whether to engage in a cheshbon ha-nefesh as to what the source is for a lot of things that we take for granted. Well, a lot of us have moral positions that we, I don't know, adhere to, maybe even passionately advocate, and don't necessarily stop to ask ourselves where they come from. Sometimes people can very passionately, maybe a little less euphemistically, aggressively advocate for certain things based on ideas that it's not clear whether they've ever asked themselves, where did those ideas come from? Did I just absorb them from the surrounding society? That maybe these are the what's currently fashionable in American or, more broadly speaking, Western society? Or do these ideas and ideals, are they rooted in Torah? Are they rooted in HaKadosh Baruch Hu's morality? Or are they rooted in 21st century society? We have the Bechira, whether we ask ourselves that question, whether we engage in that cheshbon ha-nefesh of, again, moral positions that I just take for granted. Do I know what the source for that is? And is it clear to me that the source is within Torah, within HaKadosh Baruch Hu's blueprint for the world? Or is it just because we're all sponges and we all, unless we're consciously filtering, we all just absorb things from the surrounding society? The last point, it's not really it's not really a distinct point in terms of the role that Bechira plays in the Madam and Amadas. To be receptive to truth, to engage in that type of cheshbon ha-nefesh we were just talking about, a person needs the humility to be willing to be meshabed himself to when something becomes clear that this is what the Torah thinks, this is what Chazal teach, this is what it says in Shulchan Aruch, a person needs the humility to be willing to accept that and willing to try to rethink and come to a new understanding and leave aside what he felt and thought until this point. One of the biggest impediments to knowledge is ego. Rav Zichron of Bracha used to say that a Bal Gaiva can't become a Talmud Chacham because he thinks he knows everything already. He can't learn from anyone. And again, that's, I think, what he was commenting on is maybe the least of the fallout and the least of the negative corollaries of arrogance, of gaiva in the realm of madam and amados. Maybe let's talk about another facet of the sugya of Bechira Chavshas. In Shemana Prakim, the Rambam quotes the famous Maim HaChazal, that HaKol Bidei Shemayim Chutz Miyor Shemayim. And he says, when properly understood, so this Maim HaChazal doesn't contradict in the least what he has been talking about until then. What the Rambam had been talking about until then is that everything we do is subject to our Bechira. Nothing a person does is beyond a person's Bechira. Everything a person does is, again, is an expression of and results from his Bechira. Now, it is true that sometimes what I'm doing today is not just the result of my Bechira the second. It may be some momentum based on my Bechira yesterday and 2 days ago and last week and last month and last year, but that's a different topic, that's a different shmuz. But whatever a person does is from his Bechira. So what does it mean, HaKol Bidei Shemayim Chutz Miyirah Shemayim then? So the Rambam says it means everything else other than human affairs. It means all the functioning of the universe. The sun doesn't decide in the morning what time it should wake up and what time it should begin moving and whether it should move from east to west, or hey, you know, why not change things up a little bit and we'll go north to south today and variety of the spice of life. The sun is programmed. Everything, all the functioning in the world is programmed by Ritzon Hashem. And Ritzon Hashem is that we should have Bechira in everything we do. That's what the Rambam says. But let's just process that for a minute, Rabbi Osai. But Chazal said that the only thing which is in our hands is Yirah Shamayim. The Rambam tells us, and not only the Rambam, we're using the Rambam as an example, but here, as in so many, many other areas, he's a spokesman. Not an individual, but the outstanding spokesman for Torah. But the Rambam tells us that everything we do is in our hands. So what's the implication when you integrate those two things? Everything a person does is relevant to Yirah Shamayim. Right? That's the clear implication when you juxtapose those two statements. Chazal say the only thing that's up to a person is his Yirah Shamayim. The Rambam says, and again, the Rambam as a spokesman, not as the author of an idiosyncratic opinion. The Rambam says everything a person does is in his hands. Clearly, the only way those two statements integrate, and the only way those two statements mesh, is if everything a person does is relevant to his Yirah Shamayim. What does that mean? If I understand if a person did put on tefillin or didn't put on tefillin, that reflects Yirah Shamayim. But if I ate Cheerios or I ate cornflakes for breakfast, that's Yirah Shamayim? So the emes is that before the Rambam, Rechava Salvados also discussed the same thing. And in effect, again, sort of paraphrasing and summarizing, the Chavos HaVavos in basically tells us the following. Of course, when it comes to eating matzah at the Seder, eating that particular food at that particular time, is a mitzvah. Not eating lobster at any time is also a mitzvah. And ein hachanami, whether a person eats Cheerios or whether he eats cornflakes for breakfast, is mutter. It's not mitzvah. It's not also. It's not a commanded action. It's not a prohibited action. It's a permissible action. But even in permissible actions, one's Yirah Shamayim expresses itself in the sense that if a person eats moderately, and he eats moderately in accordance with what the Rambam describes in Hesedayas, so then it's true that the specificity of whether I ate the Cheerios or whether I ate the cornflakes, you know, that never becomes a mitzvah per se. And the Yirah Shamayim can be equally expressed in the Cheerios as it is in the as it is in the cornflakes. But the fact that you don't have that detail doesn't mean that this is menutak from Yirah Shamayim. In everything a person does. Whether a person sleeps with one pillow or two pillows, so does the Torah dictate that? No, the Torah doesn't dictate that. And it's not going to be a function of Yirah Shamayim whether I sleep with one pillow or two pillows. But Lamaisa, if I only need 8 hours of sleep and I sleep 10 hours a night, so that is an expression of my Yirah Shamayim. If I only need 8 hours of sleep and because of that I only sleep 8 hours a night, so that's also an expression of my Yirah Shamayim. So it comes out that even though whether I sleep with one pillow or two pillows is begedra mutter, it's neither a chiyuv nor an issa, but the act of sleeping does bespeak and reflect one's Yirah Shamayim. It is an occasion for one's Yirah Shamayim to be expressed. And everything a person does, even if it isn't the specific of the what, one pillow, two pillows, Cheerios, cornflakes, but the midah with which the person does it, Yirah Shamayim, excuse me, is always relevant. This is so crucial because sometimes we make a mistake, or we're prone to making a mistake that when I'm in the Beis Medrash learning, when I come to shul to daven, so I'm involved in Avodas Hashem, you see my Yirah Shamayim reflected, but then there are many times which are sort of necessarily, blamelessly diverted from Avodas Hashem, from Yirah Hashem. I have to make a living, so I make Shabbos for Panosa. I have to eat breakfast on supper. I have to attend to basic hygiene needs, etc. And those are times that we sort of erroneously think are legitimately, blamelessly, but being diverted, and that's got nothing to do with Avodas Hashem, nothing to do with Yiras Hashem. No, the Rambam says, HaKovid HaShemayim, Chutzmi HaShemayim, HaKovid HaVavah tells us, means that everything a person does is B'yado. So apparently that means that every single action the person is engaged in, there is something, there's a context, there's a way the person does it, there's how much he does, where Yirah Shamayim is always relevant in everything a person does. Is it a question of Yirah Shamayim if a person wears a blue shirt or a yellow shirt? No. But is it a question of Yirah Shamayim if he comes dressed properly to tefillah? If his shirt is tucked in for tefillah, if his shirt is not tucked in for tefillah, if he dresses modestly or immodestly? Absolutely yes. So that means that when a person's getting dressed in the morning, so that's an occasion for Yirah Shamayim. That's an occasion for Yirah Shamayim. Kahena v'kahena in everything a person does. Almost everything a person does. It's tremendously empowering in the sense that we realize what the potential is to be involved in Avodas Hashem in everything we do. Not only whether it's eating matzah or not eating lobster, but every Arab Avodah Tzareim, every breakfast, lunch, supper, a person eats in a refined, moderate manner. That's a reflection of Yerach Shamayim. A person does otherwise, it's a reflection of something else. But everything a person does is a measure of, an expression of, and an opportunity and a challenge in terms of one's Yerach Shamayim. The pasuk, or some of the pasukim in Chumash that talk about this yisod, the Rambam quotes, "Ika ze ika gadol hu hu amud hatorah v'hamitzvah shenama ve'ena satil fanacha hayom esachaim esator v'samovis v'sara." Again, just to reread. Ve'ein osad l'fanach hayom esachayim esatov v'samov z'sara. Ve'ein anochi nosi l'fanachem hayom v'rachu k'vala. The unmistakable impression conveyed by these psukim is that life is very simple. Just two stark choices, two dramatically different choices. It's Re'ei Anochi Nosei Nefechem Hayom, Baruch Hu Kvala. It's Re'ei Nosati Lefanach Hayom, Esachayim, Esatov, Esamar, Esarah. Sounds like life is very simple. But that doesn't really jive with our experience, you know? Our experience, life is often complicated. So what's pshat? How do we sort of reconcile our experience of life, which has lots of complex and complicated situations, with, no, it's simple. There's chaim and tov. There's one door which opens the path to chaim and tov. That's one path. There's another path of es hamovis es hara. So the answer is that we need to distinguish between a person's fundamental commitment and then applications and implementations. In terms of a person's fundamental commitment, life is simple. Either a person commits that what he wants is what is legitimately chayim and tov, or not. That is simple. That is simple. There's a Ribon Shalom, there's a Torah, there's an Olam Hazeh which leads to Olam Haba. As profound as all those things are, they're very simple also. The consequences of focusing on those things are very simple to understand, and the consequences of ignoring are very simple to understand. Now, it's true that we encounter complexity sometimes in knowing, well, in this particular situation, what's tov, what isn't tov. I want to stay another year in Eretz Yisrael. My parents don't want me to. So that's true. There are complex situations. But the complexity, if the complexity is, do I want Chaim and Tov, or do I want Moritz and Rock? Do I want to pursue a lifestyle that will allow me to be very materialistic and very indulgent? Or do I want to pursue a lifestyle which focuses on what's enduring in life, on Avodas Hashem, that's a very simple, again, the Yetzer Hara puts up his fight. But the choices are simple enough to describe. It's very important to realize that, yes, that there is complexity in terms of application and implementation, that there can be, and there are, endless situations and scenarios where we're not sure what tov means in this particular context. But it's always, again, conceptually simple, and if it's not practically simple, it's because we're too much poseach hashteyah sitim between the Yetzer HaTov and the Yetzer HaRa. But it's always conceptually simple to know that there are certain basic truths that Olam Hazeh is intended as a transition to Olam Haba, for everything that implies and for all of its repercussions and consequences. That's a very profound but simple yisod. And that's what the Torah says. Torah tells us, you know, you can choose to live by it, you can choose not to live by it. But it's a very, like a simple choice, because the options are very different. The complexity that will still be there, that the Torah is not disavowing, the Torah is not denying, yes, sometimes there can be, is this the person I'm supposed to marry, is this not the person I'm supposed to marry? A person can be fully committed to Chaim and Tov and not have clarity on that issue. What should I be doing as Hishtadlus for Parnasa, etc. In terms of the application and the implementation, of course there can be layers of complexity. But we have to make sure that that's where, and that's only where the complexity comes from. But in terms of the underlying commitment, sometimes that's simple. The underlying commitment is that it's simple. I can get this job, but I'll have to be on call on Shabbos or something. I can get this spot in, they'll guarantee me 99% that they'll never bother me as a consultant on Shabbos. Conceptually, that's very simple. I can't be a consultant for some computer breakdown, no matter how big the company is, on Shabbos. And that's what the Torah says. Don't mistake the complexity of applying values to the simplicity of distinguishing the values. Often, when we find ourselves caught up in a dilemma, not all the time, but it does happen. Sometimes if a person just steps back and asks, okay, what are my values? And in light of my values, so now let me rethink what the two options are. Lots of situations that we mistakenly think at first blush are complex and leave us befuddled as to where to go. So the emphasis is that they're not as, some of them are pretty simple. Some of them are exactly the way the Torah is depicting, and it's those situations that the Torah is talking about, which you much, much have to look at.